It wasn't that long ago that we had in the church since I was 2 years ago. Well, that's off the basis. Sister Shula Prabhupada. Om Gyan Timanas. Gyan Janashalaya. Chakshura Vedam Yena. That's my Shri Rabbe Maha. Shri. This is it. In this verse that Srila Prabhupada would have us chant at the time of initiation, the emphasis is there on the potency of remembering Krishna, remembering Krishna's names, which is really the essence of Krishna consciousness. Smartavyam satatam Vishnu. And that process in itself is so powerful that it qualifies those who, from a ritualistic point of view, are technically unqualified for initiation. And this type of initiation is the initiation that is not dependent on ritualistic means bodily designations. It's only dependent upon one's original spiritual position, that we're all eternal servants of Krishna, and before Krishna, Mamayvangsa Jivaloka. Everyone is equal. Brahmin, Kshatriya, Brahmin, purified, unpurified. If someone is sincere about making an effort to, according to their own ability, to remember Krishna and serve Him, then they qualify. And with that in mind, Srila Prabhupada gave at risk of criticism from even his own spiritual family, but what to speak of other more ritualistically inclined Vaishnavas or even just religious followers, spiritual organizations, leaders of spiritual organizations, to give initiation to those who are technically considered Yavanas, Chandalas, Malechas, so amongst the groups of the unqualified. But Srila Prabhupada saw this essential feature, not of where you were born or what you did in the past, but what you are now and what you're trying to be now. And especially for those for whom such a thing is really quite difficult, regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, this whole new culture, not Indian culture, spiritual culture, but appears to come through India, in a Judeo-Christian background society, which also had its risks of being stigmatized, of being labeled a cult member, a sect member, a fanatic, and so many other things. And of course, especially because Srila Prabhupada not only enticed devotees to be followers of Krishna, but simultaneously he wanted them to actually give the science of Krishna to others. And disqualified them to be suci, disqualified them to be pure and to be further purified through the process of initiation, which Prabhupada speaks about at length, guru-disciple relationship, he speaks about a lot in his books. And although Srila Prabhupada's vision of, as with other things, the way in which this process of parampara guru-disciple relationship continues within the Krishna consciousness movement was sort of implicit in the way that he established ISKCON. Sometimes devotees bring up this idea or this expression that there's a traditional guru-disciple relationship and not non-traditional, but something that's sort of new to Islam. In other words, previously, Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasadanto Guru Hikam, a disciple was someone who lived in a local village. There was the Kula Guru, Shandipani Muni, and he would teach the children of those who lived in the village, and then more or less those villagers would stay in the village because there was nowhere else to go. It wasn't that they were commuting, I don't know, from Leicester to London or that type of thing. Everyone was living a very simple lifestyle. And there was also no such thing as an institution. And then when I mentioned the word institution, like ISKCON, then there's, well, this is something sort of non-traditional, is how a guru functions within an institution. He's no longer exclusive, the only person. And there's a new phenomenon, is that he's not the ultimate authority. I get to that point because I just like to make a few comments on that principle. But I just want to elaborate on the issue of whether this is actually traditional or non-traditional. We had a discussion about this, very nice discussion at one of our GBC meetings some years back. And it was highlighted that what is guru-disciple tradition? Guru-disciple tradition means you're a guru because you follow the order of your guru. What he asks you to do doesn't establish traditional or non-traditional. Tradition is, and is consistently the same, is, and of course this we'll hear and read everywhere, is a person is only as much a spiritual master as he follows his spiritual master. And if he deviates, he's no longer a spiritual master. And of course, because that goes back to the original spiritual master, Krishna. And unless you're following Krishna, then you can't be a guru. So your guru's following Gorda. First guru, Lord Balaram, and then from there on they're coming down, Vyasadeva, and in his parampara, all of these members, everyone's following. So therefore it's not an issue of that in ISKCON there's something that's non-traditional. It is traditional. It's just a question of what was it that the traditional process of following the order of our guru entailed. Can I make a comment here? I don't know, this is like a new phenomenon of men wearing hats in the temple room, which doesn't go on in any synagogues it does. It doesn't go on in any church, to the best of my knowledge. It doesn't go on in Vaishnav temples or Hindu temples. Ladies can cover their heads. But men don't wear hats, unless they turn off the heating. And so our tradition really is that Srila Prabhupada, according to in pursuance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even going back to Jiva Goswami's order, established an institution. He established the head of this institution, which is the Governing Body Commission. We're also having another very interesting discussion on the GBC body about what it means ultimate managing authority. And that's a very lively discussion. Does it mean manager, or does it mean everything? Spiritual and managerial and theological and philosophical and everything. I think here in the queue it's we're the everything people. And even at least by default, if it's not like that, then it's extremely difficult to define how ISKCON is going to be what Srila Prabhupada wanted it, which is an international society that spreads Krishna consciousness all over the world in a very systematic, organized, authoritative way. And at least as our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's desire for the society is that, yes, Prabhupada gave this order, and whereas previously it was rarer, although it's not that it didn't happen, and it did happen, it happened within other maths, other Vaishnava maths, what to speak of even non-Vaishnava maths, such as Shankaracharya's very well-established preaching institution, that gurus can also be subordinate to the authority of the institution, which means that they serve their spiritual master and they serve the greater whole of the society for the purpose of serving Krishna, for the purpose of, in our case, spreading Krishna consciousness around the world in a very effective way. Does it diminish the authority of the spiritual master? Not really, because his authority comes by following the instruction of his guru. So the idea, and that idea is what actually split Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's organization, that subordinating oneself, subordinating the absolute authority of a guru to a managerial body, compromises acharya mam vijani am sakshad hari. But actually, it can't. At least, it certainly can't at the risk or at the cost of going against the order of your guru. And therefore, Prabhupada used such very, very heavy words, asara, useless. His version was that this idea that no guru always has to be on top, and there are such spiritual institutions. There are many such spiritual institutions who envisage that the only way a spiritual institution works is if the spiritual head, which is generally one, is ultimately the ultimate managing authority, is the ultimate leadership. Then it's very simple and easy. And it is, provided that that ultimate spiritual head is both able to take responsibility or set up a system that preaches spiritual life, Krishna consciousness all over the world, and the other is that he also maintains the integrity of his office, or in short, he doesn't fall down. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we've seen that both the former and the latter are very difficult. And therefore, it's Srila Prabhupada had this other vision that, no, the guru is not invested with all the authority of the institution, but rather he is also a servant, just like everybody else. And he performs this as a service. His service is to give diksha. Everyone else is giving shiksha as their service. He also should be giving shiksha. But he also gives diksha, initiation. And by dint of the fact that he gives diksha, which is actually a principle that's based on shiksha, divyam jnana yutod hariyad kuryad papavati samshaya. So Srila Prabhupada says, initiate him with transcendental knowledge. Hypothetical question. If diksha gives the guru some kind of extraordinary position or authority within the institution, and that diksha is based on shiksha, that means that anyone here who's giving guidance and instruction to others has some type of independent authority by dint of the fact that they're also giving shiksha. If that was the case, we've really got anarchy and chaos on a really exponential scale. So it doesn't work. And this is another topic that is being discussed in different ways on the GBC. Does the Diksha Guru have some kind of special inherent authority? Service? There's no argument. But authority, does he get authority because he gives Diksha? And at our last GBC meeting in Bombay, at the conclusion conclusion of which Shaiv Thakur Maharaj became, not at the conclusion, but in which Shaiv Thakur Maharaj became very ill, but now he's really recovering very handsomely. The GBC gave the overall, or at least the to the general question, they gave the overall answer, no. No, it doesn't. You don't become authorized. So sometimes, and this is unfortunately a misconception that has not only crept into our society, but has been actually institutionalized. So a temple president or someone tells a devotee, you should do this, and he says, I have to go and check with my spiritual master. It's like this, that type of psychology completely disempowers the real management of ISKCON, and then obviously the spreading of Krishna consciousness. It's like in an army. I don't know. The sergeant says, "Shoot at them," and he says, "Wait a minute, I got to phone my father. If you pick up the telephone, I'm going to shoot you." That's the only answer that he gets. Either you do what you're told right now, or you're disqualified. So, no, it's not. And does that mean that the position of the Diksha Guru is minimized? No, not really. It just means that there requires to be a very close and integrated cooperation between them, where it's very clearly understood between them, meaning between those who are giving the Shiksha. I usually call the Shiksha Gurus and the Diksha Guru, because very often the Diksha Guru is like here, 2 weeks a year is how much I spend in the UK, so I'm not resident here anymore. So the Diksha Gurus aren't there. That's a little time. It's another topic to touch on. So that there's such a good communication, such good relationship, and the devotees in general also understand that whatever my local authorities are requesting me to do, that's automatically supported. I don't have to check. It's automatically supported by my spiritual master. And if there are irregularities, which there will be, because we're in the material world, because we're part of an institution, anyway, those things can be worked out. So, therefore, devotees need to have a very clear vision of just what the role of Diksha Guru is, and without qualifying what, for instance, Pragosh Prabhu had said earlier, or Shruti Dharma Prabhu, but the karma is born by those who take responsibility. So when we say the Guru takes karma, it can refer in the singular sense, it refers to the plural sense. It's a question of who's taking responsibility. Who's taking responsibility for someone's spiritual life? So Krishna has a very well-balanced system set up, both in the material and spiritual world. So he makes people responsible. For people who have authority are also responsible. So if someone has authority over someone else's spiritual life, they're responsible. So if a temple president is going to have authority, then he's also going to be responsible. So then he has to also take karma. Srila Prabhupada also had said as much, that yes, you also take karma. Everyone takes karma. Guru na sat sat, sajun na sat sat, pinaya pita na sat sat, janani na sat sat. Mother, father, everyone's taking karma. You touch a doorknob when you're coming into the temple, you're taking karma of the other 10,000 people before you who touched it. So it's not a question of such some kind of exclusive thing that people take karma. People are sharing karma by being in contact with each other, and especially that contact which takes real serious responsibility. That means that yes, they're also taking karma. So it's not just the Diksha Guru who takes karma. And it's not just the Diksha Guru who's contributing to, or taking responsibility for taking someone back home, back to Godhead. Which brings to the earlier point I was going to mention, that Srila Prabhupada does make this statement that, generally speaking, Diksha Guru is the person who's given the most Shiksha, which is something I just advise devotees to consider, that accepting as a spiritual master the person that you know, not the person that you don't know. The person that you see, as opposed to the person that you very rarely see, because what you see is what you get. So at least you know what you're getting. And of course it isn't an automatic given that just because someone's acting in the capacity of a guru, and particularly because I have no knowledge or very little knowledge to the contrary, to sort of disqualify him from my own conception that he must therefore be a Mahabhagavat. And I've seen that, unfortunately, devotees who've been in the position of guru haven't turned out to be Mahabhagavats. But sometimes they were Madhyamadikaris or even Kanishtadikaris, and therefore they came across, they became subject to the enticements of the material world. And it's the responsibility of the disciple to know, not to fantasize, because I'm accepting someone, he must automatically be a Mahabhagavat, or this sort of really, idealized conception that because someone's been accepted as a guru, he must then be whatever Bhagavatam says. And generally Bhagavatam talks about guru. Srila Prabhupada mentioned this point, that spiritual master should be a eternal associate of the Lord. He should be a resident of Goloka Vrindavan. And that's the Bhagavad Vidhi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his mission to save the conditioned souls, and considering that the relative rarity of such exalted personalities, allowed Amara Agya Guru. He gave this order. Anyone who's in India, and actually everyone, to take the responsibility of guru, which means that you have then a whole broad spectrum of devotees who are spiritually advanced. And here my point was not to talk about what is the sort of relative merits of different levels of spiritual master, but rather the fact that spiritual master generally comes, is generally chosen amongst those whom you seeing on a day-to-day basis, on a regular basis, people whom you know well, Vaishnavas whom you know well, and then you can measure the realistic symptoms of that Vaishnav, how advanced they are, and develop sufficient faith, whatever their level of advancement, that you can serve them as and deal with them as Shakshatari. Once you make that commitment, then whatever, just like in the example of the army. However good that general is or that sergeant is, there's only one way to function in an army. You have to follow him. There's no, well, he's not polite, he's not nice, or he's got some bad habit. Of course, there's certain bad habits that they can't have, but there may be so many other types of personality traits or even lack of realization that may be there within a spiritual master, but still Sakshatari. Still he has to be treated as good as God, otherwise the process doesn't work, particularly from the top. Because Sakshatari isn't just that we're looking up and we're treating, but rather Krishna isn't reciprocating if we don't respect and give that type of deference to a person who we're accepting actually is our future. So it's one thing for devotees to also consider that look amongst those who are regulars, who reside here, who are senior devotees, who are already taking responsibility for our spiritual lives, who are giving us that type of guidance, which everyone has to be extremely cautious about this. Shruti was mentioning this issue of disrespecting Guru, Guru or Vagya, one of the offenses to the holy name. So one thing is, all right, you have your Diksha Guru and you commit some offense. But what happens when you ignore and hear Avagya, Guru or Avagya, Prabhupada would say, minimize the spiritual master? What happens for those people who are actually regularly taking responsibility, giving guidance, and going through a lot of hardship, heartache, in order to help us advance in Krishna consciousness, and somehow or another we just put them into a different category, or we ignore them. We think, well, he's just a manager, but he's my real guru. That also becomes Guru Aravagya. And no matter how much you respect this guru, if you offend the other guru, then your advancement in Krishna consciousness becomes curtailed. So it, Bande Gurun, the Chaitanya Charitamrita begins like that. Bande Gurun, I worship my gurus. Isha Bhaktan, and then I worship the devotees. So we know we can't be selective about whom we're going to respect and who we're not going to respect. Krishna expects devotee to be sufficiently discerning. So Rupa Goswami also, when he discusses what are these three different types of Vaishnavas or gurus, Krishna iti yasya giritam manasanadhiritam. And Prabhupada also in the purport repeats, it's the duty of the devotee to be intelligent enough to discern the level of advancement of a spiritual master. That's a very grave responsibility. And it requires certainly a evolving level of Krishna consciousness. But the Dhammi Bhutti Yogam Tam, that intelligence Krishna will give. Krishna gives us that type of intelligence if we're looking for it. And if we want it. And if we think that we actually need it. Which we do. Otherwise, we see if we get into this sort of narrow framework of looking at things that I only know this person and I don't know anyone else, then it can be very, very dangerous waters. And that type of, I've given this example before, that type of sort of expansive Krishna consciousness that you see it very often in Indian families. I can't remember, I was just recently with some Indian family and they just introduced me to some members of the family and says, this is my sister. I said, sister, I know this family for a long time. I couldn't have missed this sister. Of course, she wasn't a sister, she was the sister-in-law. She was, came from another family, but they become sister. And so, in other words, the consciousness is that everyone fits in. There's no dearth of space in terms of respect and love for within the realm of guru. It doesn't have to be exclusive. Doesn't have to be just one person, but it's expansive, and it accommodates many, which is really necessary for us to work as a spiritual family. When we use this term family, family implies that type of consciousness, although obviously big families like this are rare, but still that's what we want to realize. These are just a couple of points that I wanted to mention in terms of guru-disciple relationship, which are have a little emphasis, somewhat different than perhaps the general initiation lecture, or where we emphasize the position of the Diksha Guru, which should be emphasized, but sometimes, or not sometimes, but often, and that has perhaps become the tradition, that emphasis has led to an exclusivity, and it's led to a de-emphasis of the other gurus, which is not healthy for us as individuals, and it's extremely unhealthy for the Krishna consciousness movement. And it also leads to other types of... managerial and preaching obstructions, which I'm not going to get into, but perhaps you've already heard of them. In other words, when the Diksha Guru's relationship is not balanced within the society, but it becomes exclusive, it becomes parallel to it, or superior to it, or... So we don't want to end up becoming a confederation of disciples who are working within ISKCON under their guru. That's not ISKCON. That's not it. That's, you could call it Gorimat, but because that's what Gorimat, well, not in Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur's time, and now we call it sort of a greater institution, but they've all broken up. Position of Diksha Guru is something that needs to be extremely fluid in terms of how its authority and respect is spread out throughout the society, so it enhances and strengthens the actual authority structure that Srila Prabhupada established, which was the GBC body and the secretary and temple presidents. And of course, we don't even have just temples now, because the majority of our devotees don't live in temples, but they have congregations, Namhata, and everything. But all of these have one place in which they derive their authority. And whatever services individuals render, be that of giving Dikshan, and of course that means a Diksha Guru is a preacher, it's his identity. He preaches, he gives transcendental knowledge, or a Sankirtan devotee, so many other types of services. They're all meant to be actually serving the greater whole and making the society successful, not some little one part of the society or one group of individuals. So our therefore, just in conclusion, because I don't want to go on too long, therefore we should need to highlight that this initiation means initiation into ISKCON. In India, people, they sort of relate to us as the ISKCON Parampara, not exactly the ISKCON Parampara or ISKCON Sampradaya, with Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya, but it's initiation into a society in which our revered spiritual master plays an important role. But it's that there's a greater entity that we're participating in, that we're becoming instrument of, and that we have an obligation to. And we've seen that sometimes in the past when this conflict came, say that a guru, and it's happened here, happened in this very room, at occasions in the past when the guru left ISKCON, the followers were wise enough to realize, well, but I'm not going to, because I joined this society. My allegiance is to Srila Prabhupada, who wanted my allegiance to be to this society, so I'm not going to follow. And that was certainly the wise choice. It was the learned choice. So yes, we have a greater identity, and that identity to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And this initiation, it may be the beginning, it may have also actually started much earlier, because initiation starts at when one is really becomes serious about committing oneself to Krishna, and the process begins perhaps with the relationship with Krishna, and then Krishna sends Guru Krishna Prasadi by someone to continue on that mission, and then it will continue throughout our lives, the process of developing our love for Krishna, but within the framework of Srila Prabhupada's organization. And then, of course, which really shows our commitment that we're also, in one sense, and I don't think anyone's going to charge me for being a Ritvik, but we're also taking initiation through the Parampara and particularly establishing a very real connection with Srila Prabhupada, which is another onus on all members of this movement, that they really have to know who is Srila Prabhupada, what he wanted, what his instructions were for individuals, for the society, the mission that he expected every single member of this movement to take responsibility for. And that initiation also means that. It needs to be defined within perhaps the international scale, locally here. What is a initiate? Can he avoid taking responsibility for the mission? I think not, personally, but anyway, I'm no longer managerial authority here, so I shouldn't say anything. And there's a dictator, I'm going to say even less. But in principle, yes. If you're taking initiation, then Amara Agya Guru. You've taken responsibility for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, and you have to preach. You have to take responsibility for supporting this movement in whatever way that your gurus decide, whether it's financially, or you have namharas in your homes, or you go out and distribute books, or you... So initiation isn't just something else that, you know, I had confirmation when I was, I don't know, 12, 13 years old, something like that. I didn't really mean anything to me. I couldn't figure out what it was about. My mother couldn't explain it to me. No one else was involved in the confirmation, knew what it meant either. And even when we didn't know the answer, then the priest was actually even sort of, you had confirmation. Did you know what it was about? So no, it's more than just that. It's more than just getting connected to my guru. It's an obligation. The obligation is there, and one could make a good argument that now your obligation is to be guru, therefore you need to take responsibility for that. And what to speak of service to the deities. Anyway, I'm going on, so I won't go on any further. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jalana Shiva Maharaj
ki jai.
Say that again. Yes, you go ahead, you call them. How will they who will they pay obeisances to help them?
What we'll do is we'll come up with an assistant problem with the details.
Fine.
I'm going to call up the initiates, and the system is if we can make